Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, May 16th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, the good news is today gold was up bright early this morning, $15. The bad news is fell back. And after the after European markets close and California wakes up, gold retraced its gains this morning. We're still looking up on the New York spot price, up a buck sixty on the New York spot at 1275. Silver was up 05 at 1723. Platinum was down 1 at 1053, with palladium down 2 at $594. The USDX today was stronger, along with the oil prices was stronger. And let me get back to those. Let me get to my – the Dow was up 174 points today at 17,710. The NASDAQ was up 57 at 4775, and the S&P was up 20 at 2066. All markets were down in early morning trade. That just doesn't seem to matter anymore. 10-year yield still at 1.75, up 0.5. Euro 1.13, up 1.10, up 10.10. And let me see if I can get back to my USDX today. Basically unchanged, 0.01 to the downside, 94.56. Crude oil was up 1.66 at 47.87. Looks like the world is good, Al.
It's rotating.
Yep.
Sun is coming up in the east and setting in the west. And
however, there was a huge ETFs, the holdings in ETFs have increased to 1,800 metric tons. The most since December 2013. This is according to data that is compiled by Bloomberg. After hitting a seven-year low in January, in the past 2 weeks, this price has lost a little bit. People have come in, and the ETFs have swelled 63.2 tons, rising every day. And certainly gold is getting some interest. It's the best-performing major metal this year after silver. And of course, we have the negative rates in Europe and in Japan, and the discussions on whether the Federal Reserve is going to tighten further. We have demand that has jumped to the second highest level ever in the first quarter. And this is according to the World Gold Council. So people are being driven to gold. There is a strategist at IG Asia said that there is a structural shift in investment demand. And we're going to talk about Deutsche Bank in a little bit. And what was interesting in the information I have on that bank is there is a structural shift. And so, and this is what we're seeing. This is what we're seeing here in the States. Our structure, our financial structure, there's pressure on it. That's probably not even accurate as far as pressure, Al, but we're seeing changes. The structure is deteriorating. And so we're seeing it in areas of like at the Deutsche Bank and, of course, the problems that they're having. And so now we're seeing gold going. It's a structure change. It's just not a
I wonder what they mean by structure change, though. I mean, I listen to that and I say, well, we're having a structure change.
A structural shift in demand.
Structural shift. It sounds like something from somebody who doesn't know. So I don't know what the heck's going on here.
No, I think I do. I think I know very much what it means. I think it much, very much means, and what he is saying, that it's something bigger than just a few people buying up a few pieces of gold and silver. We have American Silver Eagles once again. They're on tap to do $4 million for the month, and I think they're seeing this change, a shift in the purchasing. And so I think it's a little bit deeper. It means it's a little bit deeper than just a fly-by-night, you know, gold's up a few bucks, big deal.
What you're at least hoping for is that the average person is going to start paying more attention to gold, not just major institutions. And is that what they are suggesting with their reference to a structural change?
Well, I mean, he is a strategist, and I think it's a deeper meat. You know, people are now, it's no longer going to be the barbaric. It's just like anything else. When you're ready to go from one metal to, I mean, when you're ready to go into, you're just not buying gold for jewelry. You're exchanging your fiat currencies to real money. And that, to me, I believe, is the idea of owning gold. The reason you invest in gold, the real reasons, the true fundamentals, is to me is what it means.
Well, again, I've said it a bunch of times. For me, gold and fiat dollars are two ends of a teeter-totter. And when the dollars are going down, gold is going up. That's not, there's no news in that. But there's a question of why buy gold. And for a lot of people, including myself, it's not simply because gold is going up, it's because the dollar is
going down.
But I'm doing this, for me, this is a hedge against dollars. And for me, that's, all right, fine. That's the way I see things, that's the way I've made my bet, essentially. And I'm just sitting back and say, look, the dollar is going down, and I'm gonna sit here and I'm going to wait. I think it's going to happen relatively soon, but it might be, who knows how long it's going to take. I don't know.
I think also
when it does, everybody's going to say, Al, you are so smart. In the meantime, I might not hear that very much, but when the dollar finally hits the bottom, people that are sitting around holding gold are going to be presumed. You can be a lot more popular than you are now. They say, oh my gosh, you're so smart. And patient, too.
There's several management firms, financial management firms, that are telling their clients to buy gold. They're adding more and more gold to their portfolios. And again, this is a good sign that the idea of gold is more than just it's up a few bucks and it's down a few bucks. Discussions that they're looking to protect their clients this time and to protect them, which is rare, which is a rarity.
But it's okay. Go ahead.
But I also wanted to mention you still have the, you have these central banks that are having difficult times, but you also have countries. You have China, Russia, that are continuing to be substantial and consistent buyers of gold.
We're going after gold. You know, a lot of people are increasingly looking at gold as an investment. But from my perspective, it doesn't sit back. It's true that gold is a fine investment, but it's not the central reason for purchasing gold at this time, to my mind.
It isn't.
It's not just investment. It's a kind of insurance policy. It's a disaster hedge. It's there to protect you in the sense that a life preserver can protect you. And I think people are seeing that. You and I have talked about it off and on over the course of several years, gold as a life preserver. I don't think people paid too much attention to that idea for most of the last couple of years. But I think they're coming around and they say, you know, maybe I better have some of this because the Titanic just might be, I know they say it's unsinkable, but maybe not. Maybe I better have some gold, and not just as an investment. It's an investment, too, but, you know, maybe that life preserver
it's
thing is increasingly motivating people.
It's an investment into your future, and I think this is one of the problems that we see in the gold market nowadays is you have a lot of Wall Streeters, a lot of traders come into this area. After, for one reason or another, they weren't successful on Wall Street, they found in the little niche of the gloom and doomers who believe and understand what real money is all about, and they've brought in trading principles into purchasing of gold and silver. And that is wrong. You don't trade gold. There's reasons you buy gold and silver. It is not the same as trading in paper investments on Wall Street. But these are the principles that they brought, and they're wrong. This is why you have people with estimates of $700 gold. This is why you have estimates to buy bonds. This is why people tell you to only put 5 to 10% of gold of your portfolio into gold. Well, if you have $100,000 house and you insure it for $10,000, to me is what's the point? What is the point? You're not insured, just as Al mentioned. We've been talking about insurance for years and years and years and years. So you buy gold and silver for the true fundamentals. Yeah, it's not as sexy. It's not as exciting. It's not as exciting as to have the COMEX collapse and people scrambling and you know, everybody's getting exposed for the corruption that has been brewing for years and years and years. I don't want that excitement when I'm trying to preserve my purchasing power. I want to get my gold and silver, and I want to be fully insured. I want to put it away, and I want to forget about it. Then I can go on and enjoy my merry life because your fundamental purchasing power has been protected. And that's what these new people, you know, they might be in the investment business for years and years and years and years, but into the gold area, into this area, they're relatively new. And of course, the excitement is what draws buyers. So,
you know, you mentioned you just want to set it off to the side, not think about it. Warren Buffett is somewhat famous. One of his investment maxims is don't buy anything that you wouldn't be content to just put it here, just put it in a box, leave it alone, come back in 10 years and see what you got. All right. He does not speculate, if you can believe that. Now, it may be that he does, but if you can believe that principle, he's saying you look for something that you would be comfortable, don't even pay any attention to it. 10 years, you come back, and ta-da, you are much surprised and pleased, and that's what he's looking for when he makes his investments. Well, you know, I've said for a couple of years now, in response to Buffett's principle, his investing maxim, what investment would you dare to just throw in a box for 10 years and say, okay, I'm gonna take $100,000, I'm gonna take $1 million, whatever you got, I'm going to put it in this box, and I'm not even going to look at it for the next 10 years. What would you do that with? Would you do it with stocks, bonds, ETFs? What would you do? And it seems to me, I don't see how anyone, if you stop to think about it and really apply Buffett's principle, what could you leave for 10 years and feel safe that when you came back in 10 years, it would be worth considerably more than you'd invested in the first place, other than gold? Now, I mean, it's the only investment that really satisfies Buffett's, advice. Don't buy anything if you wouldn't be, content to set it off to the side for 10 years and before you even go back and look at it. Don't buy it and sell it and speculate. Gold. Buffett would certainly, Buffett is not a gold person so far as I know. That may be changing, but he would undoubtedly have a few stocks or bonds that he's comfortable with for 10 years. But as a practical matter, I don't see how anyone could look at it and say anything would be a more sensible investment. I'm going to put this chunk of my wealth into this, leave it go for 10 years, and then I'll come back and look at it again. What can you use besides gold to satisfy that criteria? So, blah, blah, blah.
Since we're speaking about gold, we'll talk about one of the biggest manipulators of gold, Deutsche Bank, James Chappelle. He had an article today he wrote to his clients. He talks about the bank, and he says the bank faces insurmountable headwinds. Deutsche Bank has scrapped dividends. They've earmarked businesses for sale. They pledged to eliminate thousands of jobs. Their earnings have been undermined by $12.6 billion. He's one of the few guys who are telling his clients to sell. A lot of other investors or financial planners are telling their clients to buy. It's a good time to buy. Hey, things are really bad, so it's a good time to buy. But what's interesting, what he talks about that I thought, when you go through the whole article, he just talks about what they have to do by restructuring. He doesn't think it's going to be possible, because no one's going to lend them any more money. He says the bottom line, he says Chappelle wrote, that markets don't exist in the size nor pricing for the CEO of Deutsche Bank to achieve their goals through asset sales, and the firm's core business is under pressure. Seeking outside capital is also likely to be difficult, mm-hmm. as management would likely find it hard to offer any type of return on new capital investment. So he says the solution to their problems doesn't exist.
Yeah. That's one of the things you get into, too big to fail. The idea that any institution is too big to fail, when they label an institution that way, it's actually evidence that that institution has already failed. It's too big to fail, as if the failure was a possibility in the future. And what I think it actually means, it signals, no, they're toast. But we're going to keep them on life support anyway because we can't afford to let them, admit that they have grown too big for their britches and they have finally just overwhelmed all common sense and rational thought. Now they're in a hole that nobody can get them out of. Deutsche Bank is a little like that. Got too big for its britches. It became too big to fail, but it is failing.
Supposedly they had three of our central, big banks, looking at their derivatives. They had a really big derivative book and so forth. But we also know that they were, they had costs that had been linked to their so-called misconduct. So I'm wondering if they're not going to keep Deutsche Bank going along. I don't know if something like this, when it fails, how much information can we glean to the degree of misconduct at that, will that come out? If they actually did,
oh,
the
there'll
bank
be some
fail.
Clerk. There'll be some clerk who gets jailed for 40 years.
Judy Ostermeyer in accounting.
Yeah. But the guilty parties
Well, we know it's not the guilt. That wasn't the point
we'll
as far as someone.
See them in lifestyles of the rich and famous.
That wasn't my question or my statement as far as is somebody going to be held accountable? Are we going to find out to the degree whether, you know, some little scapegoat gets it or not? Will we find out? Will more information be released as far as to the degree and the extent of the misconduct that they...
There'll be more information, but whether we ever get all the information is another question. We're going to take a break because Frank insists we must. He's playing the music. So I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Got an article here from the Daily Bell talking about Hillary Clinton. And this is one of several articles that have come out. What attracted me to this article is it's one of several that I've noticed just in the last little while that are suggesting that Hillary is just about toast and that her campaign is just about over. She's gone from being the inevitable candidate and perhaps inevitable president to maybe she's not even going to be nominated. There are at least questions right now, and she's not gaining. Trump has been, his recent study and a survey or poll indicates that Trump is now at least as popular as Hillary or comparable. The two of them have comparable polling numbers. One of the things I don't know, but I suspect, is that if we were to look at the percentage of people who favor Hillary today, as compared to the percentage of people who favored Hillary a year ago, I have a suspicion that we'd find out that the two numbers were pretty much the same. I don't know that to be true, and I don't expect they'd be identical, but I have a suspicion that her popularity, while it may have held what they had back a year ago, I don't think it's gained much. Right? I think she's just there. Trump, on the other hand, has come from nowhere to something significant, and the point being he has momentum. Hillary doesn't have any momentum. She's just hanging there and waiting to be appointed president, and she's probably a little bit peeved that it's taking so long for us to make that appointment, but there's no momentum there in Hillary, and there's no real energy in her campaign that I'm able to see. Other people have observed that she's not really a natural campaigner in the sense that Bill was, and to some extent still is. You know, some people get out there and they light up the room and they move everybody and slap everybody's back and the rest of that. That's not exactly Hillary. It might be Trump, but it's not Hillary. She's not a natural campaigner. That's not working for her. So here's the article, Daily Bell. Signs from mainstream media that Clinton's campaign may be over. And it says Trump's crooked Hillary label may stick. Donald Trump dispatched his Republican rivals by branding each one with an insulting but memorable nickname. As the general election campaign nears, Trump has settled on a label for the likely Democratic nominee. Crooked Hillary. It works, he boasted to the New York Times. It flows. One or two articles don't mean much, meaning one or two articles that are critical of Hillary don't mean much, but Hillary is crooked. That theme is being offered on a more regular basis now. The public is kind of catching up to this, and Hillary has proven to be, and here's where this is the interesting point to me. It says Hillary has proven to be a dependable ally of globalist ambitions. All right? She's running as a Democrat, but she's a new world order, one world government advocate. That's the implication of the statement. And they go on and say, thus, her corruption problems have been largely ignored by the mainstream media. She's one of the insiders. She wanted to be president. She looked like she was going to succeed. So the mainstream media took care of her and didn't make much out of her various scandals. They'd be mentioned, they'd get a little coverage, and then they'd just kind of go away. They'd blow over. But all the time the mainstream media favored Hillary by refusing to cover her problems in depth, they allowed those problems to accumulate and pile up until they would reach avalanche proportions when Hillary finally ran for president. And that's an interesting insight to me. It's the sort of thing where you sit back and say, well, I'll be darned. You know, by covering up and letting Hillary get away with, figuratively speaking, murder, right? Let her get away with this, get away with that. She comes to think she's invulnerable, invincible. She can do anything she wants. The media will protect her. But here we are now in the context of a national election, and all of a sudden, all of these problems that she's had in the past, all of these problems that she apparently triumphed over, all right? And all these problems that just built up her ego to where she thought, I'm invincible. Now we see, by not dealing with them, they actually piled up. And some of them are going to break loose between now and November, or between now and the Democrat National Convention. convention or, you know, but sometime this year, these problems that had been concealed and ignored and just papered over, they've come back to haunt her. And I wonder if she's thinking, you know, maybe it would have been better to deal with these problems face up at the time and get rid of them. They would have been difficult. They would have been painful. But you could get rid of them rather than having them all essentially come up at the same time. And in a sense, that's what's happening in the context of the election. So I just thought it was interesting that Daily Bell, they observed that the mainstream media has been protecting her. Well, that only works up to a point, and then it all breaks loose. For what it's worth, the Daily Bell article continues. It says, of course, it seems fairly obvious that she sold favors for hundreds of millions of dollars as Secretary of State. And then they say, they write, the money was laundered through the Clinton Foundation. Now, that's really, Daily Bell is not part of the mainstream media, but, you know, it's a reputable media outlet. Fairly large, been around for a number of years, and they are referring to the money going through the Clinton Foundation as being laundered, which clearly, I mean, they're just flat telling you that they view the Clintons' operation as a criminal enterprise. Goes on, says there's been very little mainstream coverage. Most of the attention is focused on her email manipulations. But even this less lurid subject may prove to be too much for those charged with moving the globalist agenda forward. All campaign long, pollsters have found that many voters, including Democrats, don't think she's principled. Fairly or not, Clinton can't shed her history. All right, and that's the lesson. Why can't she shed her history? Well, in a sense, it's because she never faced it at the time. It's the old story of what you do is not the problem. That's not what gets you thrown out of politics. You can commit one stunt or another and people say, oh my gosh, look what they, it doesn't, it causes a tempest in a teapot, but it doesn't get you. What gets you is the cover up. That's what gets you. And the lesson every politician seems to know is, look, if you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, first thing you do is admit your hand was in the cookie jar and maybe come up with some cock and bull explanation for why your hand was there, that actually you were trying to polish the cookie jar. You were helping the maid or whatever to polish the cookie jar. You can come up with it, but you got to deal with it right now. And here they say, fair or not, Clinton can't shed her history. Well, she hasn't confronted her history. Hasn't really happened yet. And in a sense, with the complicity of the mainstream media, her history has been concealed by a cover-up. And yet politicians understand, first thing you do, you get caught with your hand in a cookie jar, you admit it, you come clean right now. Hillary never admitted, Hillary never came clean, and so here she is facing all of these problems are coming up in the context of a national election, and we have to wonder if she can overcome the weight of what Daily Bell has referred to as her history. What do you think, Melody? Is Hillary going to overcome the weight of her history, or is this she going to be hoisted by her own petard?
Well, you know, I mean, this election year is just a very bizarre one.
Ooh,
I mean, yeah, who would even think that she would have attempt to, I mean, the woman's got so much baggage. I mean, it's the Clintons themselves.
Yep.
She's not the problem. The problem are the people who support her. The people are the problem who continue to say they're going to vote for it. The problem are the people who continue to refuse to look at her issues. It's just like anything else. People just—it just amazes me anymore. I get baffled, and it's surprising. And then it's no wonder we are a country in the position that we're in. We just sort of have a blind eye to everything doesn't matter what side you're on. And we have a blind eye. There's a small percentage of folks who want to learn, who want to know the truth. And we continue to look for the truth and the real truth. You know, we look to both sides to find the truth, not just what, you know, someone tells us that we want to hear and believe that's the truth. You have to look at both sides to find the truth. And it's just baffling that she's even made it this far. I mean, I never thought she would. But it brings to me, I believe these are just distractions. I think the real issues in the elections are our local elections. And they're just being ignored. I mean, do we even have local elections across this country this year? I'm sure we do. I'm sure there's some pretty important ones that are going on. And you don't hear anyone speak of those. Those are all being brushed, you know, underneath the rug. So, again, there's distractions, which is, I guess, sort of what they do in election years. But I'm not sure if I answered your question, but.
Well, I'm not sure if I remember the question, so that makes us even. If you don't know for sure if you answered, and I don't know for sure what it was, then I guess we can move on to another question.
Well, I did just want to bring this up. Today there was another, the latest victim of the oil crash, even though the price of oil has been rising. A company, Oklahoma City-based Sand Ridge Energy, they did file for Chapter 11 today. Mm-hmm. They basically have $4 billion of debt. The second biggest oil-focused U.S. company to file for bankruptcy during the current oil problem. And
$4 billion is a nice chunk of change, but it isn't earth-shaking.
Well, you get a multiple of those. There's been other bankruptcy
filings.
There's been other bankruptcy filings in recent days, which includes, you know, energy exploration, production, company Brightburn Energy. On Sunday, there was a driller, Penn, Virginia. They filed last week. So again, the situation and the price of oil is rising doesn't mean that these companies are
safe.
Safe.
I've seen articles that indicate they anticipate that there's going to be a flood. And that term may be too strong, but certainly a significant increase in the number of bankruptcies filed on into the third and fourth quarter of this year. The bankruptcies in the oil business are, in a sense, according to some reports at least, they're just getting started.
They're just getting started.
Mm-hmm. And even if oil goes up to $60 a barrel, the inference of some of these reports is those bankruptcies are going to take place anyway. Some of these companies have gone so deeply into debt when the fracking boom was running hot and heavy. They've gone so deeply into debt that there's no way they're going to be saved. You can put it off, you can postpone it for a while, but they're not going to get out of this. And there are people who say that there are a significant number that can't be saved. Right now, they'll limp along a while longer, but we're still going to come to that moment when, you know, the oil industry is going to be missing a bunch of competitors.
You know, it's funny. Last year, they suffered a 32% plunge in oil production, and it's something, you know, when oil prices were rising, you have these oil companies that went out, they borrowed, they went nuts, they expanded, they did all kinds of things thinking the price would always stay high. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you don't do that. And this is what happens when you don't pay attention and do what you do well. We've seen a lot of gold businesses go belly up, you know, because they speculate. Then the next thing you know, the new money pays for old product. The next thing you know, they're out of business. And
it's called a Ponzi scheme.
They expand. They do all sorts of things when the going is good. But once you get a little bit of a disruption in the normal flow of things, it puts a lot of people out of business, and a lot of people lose.
That's the problem with this. And The problem really is that oil is not about, for you get to people, you talk to people that are running these oil businesses, relatively small businesses. All right. I'm not talking about Exxon and Mobil and Shell. I'm talking about these small operators who think they're going to get rich. What are they? They're wildcatters in their heart. Right. They are rolling the dice at Las Vegas and betting the farm. And that's not the way to run a business. It seems the oil business attracts that, a way to get rich quick and suddenly and fabulously, also a way to get broke, fabulously broke in a short period of time. Let's take a break for some commercials. Millet and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Here's an article from Ms. Shedlock at Global Economic Analysis, and it runs along a theme that he follows pretty regularly, and we talk about on this program from time to time. The growing reliance and development of robots. And this doesn't bode well. There are going to be extraordinary changes in our social structure, our economic structure, because these robots are cheaper to operate than people. We saw a report, and I've talked about it a number of times, saw the report 6 months, maybe even a year ago, that the main industrial province in China expected that all of its factories would be 80-90% robots by 2020. It's just 4 years from now. This is a spectacular technological change in the world. We're talking about robots are cheaper to operate than Chinese labor. which means they are certainly cheaper to operate than American labor. And they're not a little bit. They're talking about 80% of the jobs, maybe 90% of the jobs in the main industrial region of China. They expect in 4 years, those jobs will be gone. And those workers will be replaced by robots. So we've heard, we've expanded on that same theme on this program on a regular basis. We see where they're devising technology where trucks can drive themselves. They may send somebody along to sleep on, you know, sleep in the cab of the truck, kind of like an emergency co-pilot or something like that. But in theory, soon truck drivers are going to be replaced. Well, what are we going to do with all these people who are replaced by robots? They're developing robots that look like people to work alongside of human workers in major aircraft, in building 747s or whatever. These robots, you know, we see robots where they have the big arm and it works on the assembly line and it installs panels on the automobile as it comes down the assembly line. Or windshields or whatever, but the arm is outside the vehicle. They're developing robots that will be autonomous. They don't need to be wired into some external structure. They will walk into the interior of the aircraft and begin doing jobs inside the aircraft, working right alongside of human workers. That's coming. Well, what are we going to do with all the unemployed people? This robot business is scary, and it's advancing quickly, and it's dangerous to probably everybody who thinks he's entitled to have a job. Now, here's, but like every cloud has a silver lining, and here's one of the silver linings that we find in the idea that robots are coming. And it's an article, again, from Ms. Shedlock, Global Economic Analysis. And the headline is, Law Firm Hires Ross, an artificial intelligence lawyer. Now, Ross is not precisely a robot, right? He's a computer program. But this is pretty much the same thing, because it says the future of legal research assistance lawyers is zero. The job will soon vanish for all practical purposes. Now, you got to understand what lawyers do. One, they are computer operators, which means they and or their clerks, paralegals, whoever, they have a certain problem, and they pull up boilerplate forms and boilerplate arguments, and all they do is change names and addresses on them, and they essentially function as if they were new documents. They sell it to you if you're coming in as a client and say, oh, we just drafted this document for you. Now, all they did was pull out some boilerplate and slap your name and address in on it. And for the most part, that was the only thing they did that was new and unusual in the document. And then I'm exaggerating. It's not really true what I've just said, but it's close. There's some truth to what I've said. All right, they work as computer operators, or at least they hire people to function as computer operators to pull up the boilerplate, change names and addresses, and charge people an arm and a leg for this computerized paperwork. They also work as a very specialized librarian. And that's what most lawyers do. What they do is they go through books and maybe databases and, find law and Westlaw and whatever. And they research for relevant case law and also CFRs and laws and statutes and so on to be used to put together an argument that may win a case, win an argument when it goes to court. But most attorneys today are librarians. That's what they are. That's what they do mostly. They just research. They read, write, collect the information, and put a case together. The third thing lawyers do is they function as litigators. Now, this is something else. The computer operator, you can replace him with a robot. The specialized librarian, you can replace them with a robot, and that's what this article is about. Essentially, Ross, this artificial intelligence lawyer, is a specialized librarian. and we'll describe what he does in a moment, but the litigator is something else. I doubt that more than 10% of the attorneys in the country function as litigators, meaning someone who steps into the arena in a courtroom and actually stands there and argues a case. And whether you like lawyers or you don't like lawyers, the truth of the matter is if you have a real litigator to deal with, you have a pretty remarkable individual, remarkable man, remarkable woman. If they can litigate, this is the difference between armchair quarterbacks and people who play the game. They step in and they play quarterback. The litigators are the quarterbacks. The robots will not replace the litigators yet, all right? Maybe ever, because the litigators make the connection between the plaintiff or the defendant and the jury. And that's something that the robots are unlikely to be able to do for considerable, well, who knows, a significant amount of time. But you wanted to say something, Melody?
Well, I just, when you finish up your article, I have one here. This report came out at 3:00 as we were doing the program, East Central Time. And it was just a little article about the Chinese state-owned ICB, Standard Bank, the world's biggest bank by assets, has agreed to buy Barclays precious metal storage business facility in London. So I didn't know if we'd have time to discuss that a little
bit. Yeah, we'll have
when
time. I'll finish this up shortly. Just read a couple points. Futurism reports Ross, the world's first artificially intelligent attorney, has its first official law firm, Baker and Hostetler, and they will be employing Ross for bankruptcy practice, currently comprised of almost 50 attorneys. What they're going to, and what Ms. Shedlock's going to in this article, is saying, look, these lawyers are going to be, this is going to be bad times and for lawyers, and I'm not a fan of lawyers, having been through a divorce, custody battle, one thing another. I'm not enamored. I published a magazine called The Anti-Shyster for years. I'm not a fan for attorneys, but they're in for some very, very difficult times, because the truth of the matter is, insofar as most of what lawyers do, other than sales, do a lot of selling, but most of what they do is just research. And the truth is, we can set up programs that you plug the law into those programs, and if those programs are set up properly, you can walk up to a computer terminal, type in the relevant facts and of your case, answer some questions that come back over the computer terminal, and they're going to tell you if you have a case or you don't have one. Now, assuming no one is intentionally biasing the software to give results that are untrue, you're going to take these lawyers out of the picture. I mean, a lot of them. I think this implies to me that the number of lawyers in this country is going to be reduced by a third, maybe 60-70% within the next, I don't know, it could happen in 5 years, it might take 10, but I doubt if it'll take more than that. So we're going to see a lot fewer lawyers in our future, and as I said, for me, that's the silver lining in the robot cloud. But now, Melody, you want to talk about something happening with
gold? I think it's interesting because today there's somebody, when gold dropped, it was around 11:30. That's when the European markets closed. And somebody dumped $2.3 billion in about 10 million in about 10 minutes. So there's about $2.3 billion that was dumped in about 10 minutes. And then this report came out where the Chinese state-owned bank had purchased Barclays precious metal storage business facility in London. The deal will boost China's access to London's gold market. It'll expand the country's role in the gold business. The vault is in a secret location in London. It can store up to 2,000 tons of gold and other precious metals. At current prices, up to $90 billion worth of gold could be stored inside. Barclays, of course, has previously announced a move away from precious metals business. They opened this facility in 2012. The financial details of the sale were not released. London is the world's largest wholesale over-the-counter gold market by trading volume. which estimated $5 trillion worth of gold trades cleared there every year. And we all know that the precious metals has been traded in London for over 300 years. So now we have China is dominates in terms of actual physical gold trading. Gold imports to China have surged over 700% since 2010, and the country overtook India to become the world's biggest gold consumer in 2013. Wells Fargo, this is according to Wells Fargo, China now consumes about 40% of the gold that comes out of the earth's ground every year. So interesting that the two, are they tied together?
Perhaps, probably since
the details of the sale were not released. But, you know, China's no dummy. They're, you know, if they can hit gold and buy it at a lower price, they certainly are. Especially if there's estimates of $90 billion worth of gold that could be stored inside. So,
well, what it sounds like is they're buying an empty barn. And that has to imply that if they can store all this gold, I don't believe this is already filled with gold. I don't think they bought $90 billion worth of gold as part of their deal with Barclay. It implies they are buying an empty barn that could be used to store gold, which implies to me that China is anticipating picking up a lot of gold over in London. That's the implication to my mind. What's that sound like to you?
Well, it sounds like certainly they want that storage facility for some reason. They're taking over the Barclays precious metal storage business. Now, you have to ask yourself, what gold are they? What gold is being stored there? Okay, it isn't just, you know, gold sitting there for London. You've got other countries. Now, does this include other countries' gold stored there for the central banks? For London's central banks. So what gold is actually stored in the Barclays precious metals storage business? So, you know, we'll find out more information on this for tomorrow's program, but it'll be real interesting. I guess China doesn't have to own it if you just control the storage facility.
No, I think they're planning on buying it. I mean, to me, I don't think you know, it may be China.
Well, you're missing my point. I mean, you know, if they're controlling the storage facility.
Even that, they say this is a secret facility, right? If it's all that secret, it can't be. The gold can't be moving quickly in and out. It's the sort of thing where people are parking their gold and they're letting it sit there for a long time. Otherwise, if people are moving, sir, I'd like to get one of my coins out of the storage facility.
Which is my point.
Everybody's going to know where it is.
If it's my point, whose gold is being stored there?
Good question.
Are there other countries stored there, like the Federal Reserve?
Well, it's a good question, and I would
London does store
China
metals.
Get more gold.
London does store metals for other countries.
Well, so do we, and sometimes they can even get it back. You can ask Germany and
China's not buying ours yet, but they are buying London. So China now controls whoever's gold is sitting there in the storage facility.
They're not. They don't control it, Melody. They're just responsible for polishing it and dusting it off. They go in with a feather duster and remove the dust off those piles of gold bars. That's part of their job for owning the barn. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening, Melody. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Payment says, and still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.